AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at rubrik.com. That's rubrik.com.
Hello and welcome to the Foot Health Show here on UK Health Radio, your global real feel-good radio station. My name is Peter Alton of Circle Podiatry.
And my name is Jonathan Brocklehurst. It's our aim to raise your awareness of just how important your feet are, to give you the solutions to your foot and leg problems, and to teach you how to prevent future issues.
So grab a cuppa, relax, sit back and put your feet up, and enjoy learning about the one part of your body that often gets forgotten. That's right, it's your feet.
Thank you for listening to the Foot Health Show on UK Health Radio. My name is Jonathan Brocklehurst, and today we will be exploring a topic that shows us just how important our feet are. This show is all about the significance of our foot health in our everyday lives, the decisions we make, and the information we read and listen to relating to our foot health can be a beacon to others. And that is why the Foot Health Show exists, to inform you of inspiring and innovative ways to address our feet and mobility in the current world.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at rubrik.com. That's rubrik.com.
Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
We are grateful for the support the show receives from across the world. And if you are interested and feel this show matches your vision for shedding light on the importance of our foot health in enhancing our lives and preventing limb loss across the globe, please refer to the UK Health Radio website with details on sponsorship and donations.
So, thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for tuning in to the Foot Health Show on UK Health Radio. Today, I'm being joined by Geoffrey Dowling, who is the founder of Modeline, lead podiatrist and orthotist at TasherCare Australia. I'm very grateful to you being 11 hours ahead, which actually is great. And if you're looking towards New Year, of course, those fireworks will be on first, as I've recently discovered. So, how's it going, Geoffrey?
Yeah, great. Yeah, it's nice and early this morning, 8:30.
Yeah,
I think it's 9:30 or something your side in the afternoon.
The things you do for us, honestly.
Oh, that's so it, huh?
But yes, there we go. It's this morning, this morning for you, but for us in the evening, I suppose, me and here in the UK, it's really going to be a case of listeners today hearing from Russell Crowe and Daniel Craig, I think, as we probably saw it before. I don't know how you want to call it. Any other name suggestions? Benedict Cumberbatch, maybe. I'm thinking of Australia.
For you?
Yeah, but no, I don't
all,
think
all the smooth sounding beautiful men.
I'm trying to think what's the other one? The guy from the Hugo Boss advert is Australian. What's that one? Oh, Liam, Chris Hemsworth. You can go.
Oh, yeah. No, yeah. He's good. He's all right. Yeah, I'll take that one.
Yeah. But yeah, going to foot health, I think we've got a segue right there. I just wanted to kind of find out a bit about what you do, because listeners who across the globe be very interested, especially myself as well, to find out actually you've been involved in development of insoles. Now tell us a bit more about that, because especially there's been a huge amount of information out there on biomechanics and how people can actually see a realignment posture of their feet and everything. So it makes such a difference. Can you bring us into that?
Yeah. So I guess a bit about me. So when I was younger, finishing up in year 12, they call it over here. I don't know what they do in the UK, but sort of my final year of high school, I did placement with they call them orthotists over here. So people that make like those big braces for people who've had polio and things like that. Yeah. And so I did a week placement with him, and I thought it was fantastic. And I've always sort of liked making things with my hands. So originally I was going to do something with like electrics, so like an electrician or something like that. But I've always sort of liked making things, pulling things apart, not necessarily putting them back together properly, but so then I did that with him, and I thought this was fantastic. And I've always had, I guess, flatter feet, so I don't have much of an arch, and I had a bit of pain when I was a kid. And so over here, I guess the two professions that were mainly involved in giving out these orthotics were orthotists and sort of podiatrists. And so over here, there's sort of a bit of a rivalry between the two. So podiatrists typically do the harder plastic orthotics, and then the orthotists generally do the softer sort of foam EVA ones. They've sort of merged a little bit now, but so then I did that degree first, so prosthetics and orthotics, so making legs and also making the braces to support legs. So I guess for your listeners, the difference between a prosthetic is that it replaces something that's missing.
Yeah.
And an orthotic sort of supports something that's already there.
Yes.
So like foot orthotics is to support the foot, a knee orthotic is to support the knee, as opposed to like a prosthetic is meant to replace something that's been lost.
Yes.
So I finished up that, and then at the end I was still relatively young and naive, and I thought, well, what do I want to do? I thought, well, I'd really love to have my own clinic and get to see sort of patients one-on-one. And I really liked the diagnostic side of podiatry more than prosthetics and orthotics, because I found that a lot of the time we were getting referrals from, well, the places that I was doing placement with were getting referrals from podiatrists, or they were getting referrals from surgeons to say, fit this cam walker. So you basically put it on, they'd walk out the door, and then you'd never see them again. So I sort of liked that continuity of care. So you see them at the start, diagnose what's wrong with them, and then sort of see them out until they're sort of fixed, essentially.
Yeah.
So then I sort of dabbled in, well, what can I do? I thought either podiatry or sort of physio. And then I thought, well, I really like the foot.
Yes.
So and the biomechanics of it all. And yes, so then I went back. Yeah. And then so then I went back and did podiatry as well, which was another couple years. And so at the end I thought, great, you know, I'm a podiatrist, I'm not going to do prosthetics and orthotics anymore, I'm going to be a podiatrist. And then I did podiatry sort of for a year, and then the original person who I actually did placement with when I was in year 12 contacted me, and he said, I need an orthotist to work for me. And he couldn't remember me from when I was in year 12. And I was like, I don't know if you remember me. In the interview, I was like, I don't know if you remember me, but I actually did placement with you. And he's like, oh, you know, great. You know,
yeah. So
then I started working for him. And that was amazing, because I got to see, I worked with a foot and ankle surgeon. So a lot of the patients or the people with foot problems that would come and see this foot surgeon, a lot of the time he would basically send them to myself or my old boss to try to manage them conservatively, because what I sort of found was that most good sort of foot and ankle surgeons will generally not want to operate on a foot if right. they can avoid it, because the, all the risks and things that can happen yeah. when yes. you have sort of surgery. And, yes. and I guess that's not the picture that's generally painted out there in the world. You know, you've got a foot problem. You think, oh, great, you know, I'll fix it with surgery.
Yeah.
It'll be, yeah. it'll be fixed forever.
Very, very commonly. Felt that. Yeah. 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 And that's the thing. I agree with you. Yeah, go for it. Absolutely.
Yeah. So like even when you start, I guess, doing surgery on a joint, like that joint's going to become arthritic.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
So he would usually send them to myself or my old boss, and sometimes they were being managed by another sort of health professional. And I guess the orthotics that, or the things that were in their shoes, or sometimes even the shoes, weren't potentially doing what, you know, the best that they could. And so I sort of, we started making these more, I guess you'd call them bulkier devices. So right. bigger ones that offered sort of more support for the shoe. So originally we were making them out of this material, this mouth guard material, to sort of give a deeper heel to sort of support the foot a lot more. And yeah, so then I finished up with my old boss and the surgeon, and I sort of started my own little practice. And then it was sort of at that point that I really got into ultrasound imaging as well.
Wow. Fantastic.
So yeah, and I did a sort of a little extra course on diagnostic musculoskeletal ultrasound, because I think I'm not sure what it's like over there, but sometimes when you know there's something wrong with a person's foot, and you yeah. can pretty much, you know, take a punt at what it is, you can yes. say, yeah, I'm 99% sure, let's just get imaging to confirm it.
Yes.
You send them off for imaging, it comes back and there's nothing there, and you're like, oh, well, you know.
Could you just mention, what it is anyway. Because that's something that actually, like, listeners would be very interested in. What is the ultrasound scan? What is that? How does it actually impact diagnostics and podiatry? Briefly, as a segue from that.
So I guess ultrasound is sort of, as the name sort of suggests, so it's sound waves. So basically you've got this little transducer or like a little probe, and it produces sound waves. So sound waves come off the end of this thing, and then they interact with tissue, and then they bounce back off different tissues, and then they get picked up by that same transducer. And it's very sciencey, but then that's how it produces an image. And depending on how those sound waves interact with different tissues will give you the picture. So it's just a quick, easy, low risk, because it's sound waves. So there's no, you know, it's not like x-rays where, you know, there's radiation or anything like that. Like, you can do ultrasound on sort of anything, and it gives you just like a little slice into the foot, especially soft tissue. So I don't know, either podiatrists that are listening or anyone, it's just such a fantastic way to figure out what's sort of going on. Yeah, so I love it. Like, I don't think I could practice without an ultrasound. So
I think I absolutely advocate it, because I think you can get so much deeper, because often we look at the superficial, then there's the soft tissue, bone, joint, nerve, infection, tube, and you look at all of these different things and you think, what am I looking for? And to have that as an aid in clinic, absolutely fantastic. And actually, that
yeah, it's great. Because you can almost, you can pick up what's wrong with it, and you can say, so instead of, like, it sort of shortens the process as well. So instead of you coming in, they, you know, like the patient comes in, sees you, and they basically say, oh, you know, I think it's this, let's send you off for imaging. They go off, wait another 2 weeks, get the imaging, come back. You say, okay, it's this, maybe we'll need like an injection or whatever. Yeah. They go off again, then they have to go back, go to the GP, get a referral for thing. Then they go off, they get the injection, and, you know, sort of have that sort of thing. So it's sort of like you can do it all bang right there in the clinic. Like, it's amazing.
Fantastic. And that actually, now when we're thinking about the diagnostics of it, the actual production of an insult, I'm briefly going to bring myself back a couple of years when I was on placement as a student like yourself at the time. And something that really inspired me was actually observing an orthotist and a prosthetist how they interact as well with the patients who are, you know, have been going through various amounts of trauma, physical trauma, and also there's the anxiety, depression that could be associated as well, and how do they manage that dynamic too. And it's absolutely amazing, and how that impacted my practice. And you add things like motivational interviewing into the equation, and it's incredible. But the practical side is really where I want to kind of zoom into right now, because that actually is what's really culminated into what you have really produced now. And how that's really developing now, the technology we have and how that can impact patients is absolutely enormous. How have you utilized that now? And what are you actually looking to do with it going forward in the future?
In terms of the orthotic that
I've
sort of invented?
Absolutely, yes. Yeah.
So I guess I was sort of a bit, so once I've started my own little practice, I kept seeing these orthotics that patients had that may not necessarily be the best that they could have. And so I was like, look, a lot of the time that I was making these things. So patients would come in with these orthotics. I'd say, look, these probably aren't the best. I think I can make one that will fix your problem. And so sometimes I'd say, look, we'll try them. I'll make them for you for free. You can try them out. And then if they work, then, you know, great. You know, you've got something that's fixed your problem. So majority of the time, you know, it worked. So I said, well, what can I do to help other podiatrists? Because I think the problem with a lot of like podiatrists out there is you get stuck in the ways that you're used to. So you've been doing this thing day in, day out for, you know, 10, 15, 20 years or whatever.
Yeah.
And it's sort of hard to adapt to new ways of doing things, especially even with the ultrasound, things like that. You know, like if some people say, look, it's too hard. Oh, it's going to take me a lot of time to learn. But I mean, I started out with this massive ultrasound machine. Like it was from like the 1980s. It looked like R2-D2. Like this thing was just a nightmare. So, and it was like, I paid like $200 because I was like poor and I was, you know, just like a student or no, new grad. And I was like, I just wanted one just to have a look. And the only thing it could really see was the plantar fascia, which was a great start. And then, you know, I just sort of built my way up from there. But yeah, going back, I guess, to these orthotics, I was seeing patients where I thought, you know, I think I can give something that other podiatrists might be able to use. So I started making these sort of ones with the deeper heel to sort of give a lot more support to the back of the foot by hand, but it was taking me an eternity. And so then I ended up contacting sort of a manufacturing expert or someone who sort of designs all the 3D images and stuff like that. And so working with him for the last sort of 3 years, we came up with this design for this orthotic that, so I guess it's for clinicians only because there's a bit of a complicated fitting process and adjustment and alignment sort of thing. And so, yeah, I wanted something that had the deep heel for people that had really flat feet and I won't go too much into pathology, but like tib post, tendon dysfunction and those really, really pathologically flat feet.
Yes.
And then just something that they could, that the podiatrist could fit relatively easy and it would, I guess, give them a lot more control and support than a traditional orthotic because sort of when you look out there on the market, like, I don't know, like you get flooded with ads for these orthotics. Like
so much money as well.
That's it. Like it, on Amazon and things like that. And like if you type in orthotics into Google, like you're gonna get spammed with ads for the next like 5 months just on orthotics, Facebook, because they read everything. Like everyone's watching.
Yes, it's everywhere, absolutely everywhere. I mean, and actually, it really raises the issue that if you're someone who could be listening today, even. As sort of thinking, I want to do something because I saw some patients today earlier in clinic who were saying, I just want to be able to get on the golf course again. And I feel like it's going to be orthosis that changed this. And actually I was saying to them, do you know what? It can really make a difference, but we've got to get the assessment bit right first. And seeing a podiatrist can really benefit that process. And actually you know, getting that information out, because sometimes patients are just like, I'll go and buy that off, you know, off the counter, and that'll solve my problems. And you think, well, okay, but actually there's something else we can do. And actually it really raises the profile of the ability of podiatrists to recognize those different things from an MSK or musculoskeletal point of view. But yeah, from that development, I know you were saying about the manufacturer, what does that process look like? Because that does sound like a commitment for 3 years to get from one point to the next of actually a real development of this. What was it tough? Was it really challenging? Were there points where you thought, you know, I just don't know if this is going to work? Or did you feel like this was always going to happen?
So I guess I'm a bit stubborn. So I sort of kept at it. So this was sort of, it was almost like a hobby almost. So even at the end of it, if it didn't work out, I was sort of, at least I'd given it a, you know, a go.
Yeah.
So, but I think by the end, we ended up with version, like, I think it was like 15. So we just kept having to modify and modify and modify. And every time we'd modify it on the computer, they'd print it again. And then I'd wear it for a bit. I'd say, no, this bit needs to come out. And then, that adjusted a little bit on the computer file. And then after it was all sort of designed properly, then the tools were made. So it's like sort of two big halves of metal that sort of clamp down together, and then they squirt in the plastic.
Wow.
And then that's sort of how these things are sort of made, I guess. And then it was sort of about trying to get it to stick together, the different plastics, because, you know, like those electric toothbrushes you have where some bits are hard and then some bits are sort of softer rubber.
Yeah.
So they call that a two-stage mold, where the first, I guess, tool is the hard plastic.
Yeah.
And then that pops out, and then it pops into another one, and then that other softer plastic gets molded over the top. So they call it two-tool staging. And that's sort of what mine was, but because it's something, it's not like you're changing what's already out there. Because it was new, it was very hard to get it all right and stick together. And I think this thing, I was trying to get it, have it released, in, I think it was like January last year. And I had, I think, about 50 of these samples made up, but it didn't work. And they kept essentially falling apart. And I was like, you can't have this, you know, it's got to be durable. It's got to last, you know, as long as a normal sort of orthotic, you know, like 4 or 5, 2, 3 years sort of thing. And then so sort of went back to the drawing board and just sort of changed a whole bunch of things. And yeah, it was an absolute nightmare. Plus with COVID and everything, it sort of drew it out a little bit, but it all, you know, it's ready to go. So, and the other thing, I guess, that I sort of learned is that, I guess each country sort of has their own, cause this is a medical device. So each country sort of has their own regulatory requirements for what you need to do. So I think over here in Australia, we've got the TGA, so the Therapeutic Goods Administration. I think you guys over there have the ERTG or something like that, the European Regulatory something.
No, it was the European. I think after Brexit, everything.
Oh, yeah. I don't know what. No, I think it's the same. I think it's the same. I think they've kept that together.
Right.
Okay. they couldn't be bothered. And then I guess in America, they've got the FDA. So, because it's a low risk thing, like you said, you know, you can buy them off, you know, in the chemist and, you know, all that sort of jazz. So I guess it's a bit of work, but it's not as complicated as sort of like something that was inserted into someone's skin, for example.
Yeah.
Because then it sort of needs to be really, you know, everything needs to be made sure that it's, you know, sterile, and they look at all that sort of manufacturing component of it. But because this is sort of low risk, like a knee brace and things like that. But I liked what you were saying before, I guess, with patients at the start and saying, you know, they sort of get this thing in their head that this is what's going to fix sort of my problem. And a lot of the time it's like a combination of things. Like, it's not necessarily an orthotic that's going to fix the problem. I usually like to say that it's sort of, it's like building a house. Like if the house is the orthotic and the ground is the shoe, if you're building something on quicksand, like a lot of the flexible, terrible shoes,
yeah,
then the house is sort of not going to do anything. So you sort of got to have a good base before you start to build the house.
I agree with that. And something I've been saying for weeks and now, particularly since starting as a lecturer, was this idea of having the deep and wide toe box, that secure and adjustable midfoot basket, yeah, and a supportive heel counter. And I've been saying that constantly, actually, because I've realized that, you know, sometimes what happens along the way is a patient will say, well, for many different reasons, but one would be, I can't reach my feet, in which case you have to make a compromise somewhat, you know, can't have the midfoot fasting, be trying to get the deep in my toe box, everything else. But then there's the whole thing about the slip-on shoe, what do you do there?
And, it's all terrible. Of that
becomes an absolute matrix. But yeah, excuse me.
There's this brand that I'm not sure if it's in the UK, but there's this brand in Australia, it's called Billy Shoe.
Oh.
And they're starting to get really big over here because they've got like a zip that comes right around the end of the toe. And so then it sort of opens up like a sandwich, and then you just pop your foot in and then you just zip it up again. And the beauty is for people that can't reach their toes is that you can have like a, you know, like a clampy or like a, just a bit of wood with a hook. Yeah, and then you can sort of just like pull it right around. And they're really like, they're meant for people with, you know, those AFOs. So there's big plastic braces,
right?
But they work really well for people that can't reach their feet, and they're not really ugly either, which is great.
Yes, well, that's a massive plus, because they always say all the time, I don't want to wear an old person's shoe. And the way they say
100%.
It, even people over the age of 60, I've heard them saying the same thing, and they're in the age bracket where considering the right kind of footwear is really important. And actually, I would say something along the lines of, well, I've just bought my new pair of, won't say what brand it is because there's many of them, but there is. And then you can talk about that and they'll say, oh, he's 26. How's he wearing those? And actually, I was like, actually, it's the functionality, and it can still look pretty cool, as they say.
I think that's the biggest challenge that I've found, is that when you have a supportive shoe, generally it's not going to look as beautiful as, you know, something you get from, you know, one of those high-end stores. And then once they start to add all the features, like you were saying, of a supportive shoe, it ends up looking ugly, uglier. So it's just it's like you can't make an attractive supportive shoe. They're just like completely opposite.
It was between the trade-off of functionality or, you know, that narrow toe box, which may look great on the photos, but it's
and that's I guess that's the other thing that I tell patients. I say, look, you know, if you've got a shoe that you want to wear on the weekend that looks nice for like 10% of the day or, you know, whatever, go nuts, do whatever you want.
Yeah.
But for the rest of the time, you know, instead of wearing those slippers at home, you know, that don't have any support that you're probably falling over in, you know, just get a decent sort of shoe that you can wear and make that your 80% of the day shoe.
Yes.
And then that's a lot of the time that sort of helps enormously.
Yes. And it gives the person, the patient, they're more likely to change as a result of that, which I think actually is a lovely way to end, actually, because to the listeners, to you listening today, from wherever you are in the world right now, you have the ability, you have the empowerment to make those changes. And including what we've heard from Jeffrey today is actually that whether you decide to go forward with further assessment for biomechanical assessment, understanding the role of insoles and orthotic devices actually in your daily life, it actually can make such a difference. But we can't forget the importance of that assessment from a podiatrist, from an orthotist, from a prosthetist, because they have such important roles to play in your overall health. So thank you to everyone across the world who's been listening to the Foot Health Show today on UK Health Radio. Thank you so much, Jeffrey, for taking the time out from sunny Australia. Although how sunny is it? I don't know at this time in the morning.
No, it's terrible. It's terrible. It's been so wet. Anyone that's coming over here, just avoid it.
Yeah.
Like, we're terrible at the moment.
No surfing today. No surfing today.
That's it, huh? Not for Russell Crowe today.
No. On that Liam, note.
Yeah.
Oh, Liam, yeah, Liam Hemsworth. Yeah, exactly. But thank you so much, Jeffrey. And, really, really appreciate your time.
No, easy. Done. Lovely to talk to you.
We are grateful for the support the show receives from across the world. And if you're interested and feel this show matches your vision for shedding light on the importance of our foot health in enhancing our lives and preventing limb loss across the globe, please refer to the UK Health Radio website with details on sponsorship and donations.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Thank you for listening to the Foot Health Show on UK Health Radio. My name is Jonathan Brocklehurst, and today we have been exploring a topic that shows us just how important our feet are. This show is all about the significance of our foot health in our everyday lives, and the decisions that we make and the information we read and listen to relating to our foot health can be a beacon to others. That is why the Foot Health Show exists, to inform you of inspiring and innovative ways to address our feet and mobility in the current world. I look forward to you listening in and tuning in again next time.
Well, that's all we've got time for this week, folks. Thank you so much for joining me here on the Foot Health Show on UK Health Radio, your global, real, feel-good radio station. All that remains is for me to say, have a fantastic week. Keep safe, keep those legs and feet moving, and don't forget to tune in again with your friends next week.